Millions of people suffer from chronic illness, and not a lot of people talk about not only the chronic illness and how to overcome it, but how do you cope emotionally with that? And I have suffered for a really long time from migraine and sore throat and cough, and it made me almost not, I don't want to say disabled, but in a sense, unable to do a lot of the tasks that I really wanted to do. And you know, when you have a migraine, when you have some sort of chronic illness that a lot of people are sometimes unaware that you have, it can really impact you not only physically because you're hurting because of the physical pain, but also emotionally because a lot of times you're suffering in silence. And that's why we have a very special guest that it will tell us all about this. And his name is Dr. Jeff Bone. And he's a chronic illness mentor, author, and the host of the podcast To the Bone: Conversations on Pain, Illness, and Meaning. Dr. Bone has over 2 decades of experience specializing in the experiential aspects of the human experience of chronic pain and illness, and he's known for his person-centered approach using a combination of humanistic, existential, and mindfulness philosophies to empower clients to cope with pain and illness, reduce stress, find their identity, and improve their overall quality of life. So, Jeff, tell us about how someone can cope emotionally with chronic illness.
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.
Well, first, thank you very much for having me today. I appreciate that very much. And so I think the very first thing is that we have to recognize that we can't go back. We can't go back to a life where we don't have that illness. And that's what we all try to do. I know that I try to do that with my own chronic illness, that we want to try to do anything. And we always expect early on that the doctors will be able to get us there. But the very first thing, there is no going back once you have chronic illness. There's only going forward. And so with that, part of what I like to think of as the old self doesn't need you. The old version of who you were doesn't need you. The future version of you needs you. And what we have to do is find a story that works within the capacities that you have now. You were talking about your migraines, and it can vary tremendously for a lot of people, but it can interfere with their activities of daily living, or it can interfere with just the ability to enjoy life. Going out to a restaurant, going to a show, whatever it may be, it impacts quality of life. And we have to find a story that matches the capacity.
Thank you. So tell us a blueprint for how someone would start to cope emotionally with chronic illness. Now, I actually disagree a little bit in terms of like, you just have to kind of accept that chronic illness is going to be there, because I think in some cases, some really simple solutions can actually happen. And that happened to me. Okay. So in May 2024, I had a friend do the emotion code technique on me. And it's basically like a technique where in 15 minutes, I did this release of trauma that I think was actually causing my daily migraines. And after 5 years of suffering from daily migraines, I didn't have daily migraines anymore, and I don't have them
That's
anymore.
wonderful.
And actually, I mean, I have migraines occasionally when I have like a lot of stress, but I
There's a
would say for the
flair
most
to it,
part, I
sure.
don't have them. So I think that
So
sometimes
that
they
would be a
are.
persistent pain, and it wouldn't be necessarily a chronic pain. A chronic would be every single day, like, chronic CRPS, chronic regional pain syndrome, or there's trigeminal nerve issues. There's lots of different variations of fibromyalgia. And obviously, the emotions, and there can absolutely play a role. And everyone should go to, start with and see if it does work, if some sort of trauma-informed approach would be beneficial for some sort of treatment. I think that's wise to try it out. If we're going to try out physical therapy, if we're going to try out these injections and these medications, why not try out some sort of different trauma-informed psychological approach? I think that's wise to even just try it. but it works for some people, but it doesn't work for others. And that's part of difficulty is that there's just a wide range of biology within humanity with all these different ailments kind of across the board. And so what works for one person may not work for another person. And so there's a lot of variability.
Yes. So I guess we're talking mostly about those people that have the kind of chronic illness that is kind of less likely to be curable. How does someone cope emotionally with it? Like, what would they do?
It depends. I believe in acceptance, but I believe in acceptance 24 hours at a time, because I can't tell the future. No one can tell the future. So if someone accept something for like the rest of their life, absolutely not. But we need to accept and work within that capacity of the here and now, if that makes sense. And if we're talking about an illness that has been attempted to be resolved over a long period of time, and there really hasn't been much of a resolution, such as my condition, which is a primary immune condition, and it's not going to be resolved easily or maybe in my lifetime, the first step after acknowledging it is grief. I think it's very, very important. And that goes, and I think it has a kind of almost like concentric circles that overlap with that trauma of dealing with that emotional side. Because when your health breaks and it kind of takes you off your course, the part of the problem is you have this illusion that the health is always going to be there. You have this illusion that shatters. And when it shatters and you're trying to put all the pieces back together again, there's a tremendous sense of grief. And so part of it is having a modality that, whether it's talking to someone, whether it's journaling, whether it's a trained professional or friend, or you're just alone in your room, acknowledging and working with the grief would be that next step.
Thank you. What other techniques are there to cope emotionally with chronic illness?
So one of the things that I like, that's probably just the easiest one that like easily pick up, is something called expressive writing. And expressive writing isn't journaling. Journaling is like, right, I went to the market today and this happened and this happened. And you're describing some event that happened in the past. Expressive writing is when you set aside time and you say, okay, for the next 10 minutes, I am going to write whatever is going on in my head in that moment on the page. And after 10 minutes, I'll rip it up. So for example, you start writing and you're like, I don't know what to write. So you write down, I don't know what to write. And then you think, this is really stupid. So then you write down, this is really stupid, but keep on writing. Do not stop writing for 10 minutes. No punctuation, no sentences, grammar doesn't matter. Write it out as quickly as you possibly can. And then after 10 minutes, you need to rip it up. And the reason why you need to rip it up is you're going to be so much more honest with yourself if you know it's going to be destroyed right after it's done. If you feel as though like, oh, I can't write that, people, I don't want someone to find it. It's like, no, that's why we rip it up. And that's called expressive writing.
Thank you. What else can someone do to cope emotionally with chronic illness?
Well, you want to find a way. And there's lots of different ways. And it's like we could talk, for a while on the subject. But when it comes to managing stress in some ways. So the expressive writing is this catharsis, this emotional release out of your body. You have so much pent up just energy of just, oh, you're so frustrated with it. And you went somewhere. Now, of course, you can talk to someone, but in the middle of the night, there's no one to talk to. That's where the expressive writing is. But chronic illness, chronic pain is chronic stress. It's going to be stressful. So you want to have a practice. And there isn't a perfect practice. At the end of the day, when you're really stressed, your sympathetic arousal level is going to rise. And most people know that as the fight or flight. Now, what we want is the opposite. We want to get into that parasympathetic state, which is that rest and digest. And the list is endless of being able to get in. And I'll give you my favorites, but it's what you do on a regular basis. The body and the brain knows what a practice is on a regular basis. So there isn't going to be oftentimes a modality that you can just do for 30 minutes. And that just takes care of stress because the illness is there the next day and the next day and the next day. And that's why you want to be there with the technique again and again and again. And so everyone, or most people, I would imagine listening to you would be, you know, health conscious, health aware individuals, and they would be familiar with box breathing, or they would be, you know, familiar with the idea of belly breathing. But the idea is very simple, but it's the one step of most people don't realize why they need to do it, because this goes into the next thing that I would say. So when you're doing the belly breathing, you're going to breathe into your nose for 3 seconds. This top part of your stomach expands. You hold it for 3 seconds, and then you breathe out slowly through your mouth with a really long, it's 3 seconds, but you want to hold it. So it's like really like you're breathing out for 6 seconds. So it's like a 3, 3, 6. And the exact numbers don't matter. You want a very slow, long exhale. But here's the thing, you need to know why exactly you're doing it. It's not the lungs, it's not the oxygen. When you breathe in and the belly rises up, the diaphragm drops down and it actually changes the shape of the heart. And it causes the heart to speed up a little bit as it becomes almost pear-shaped a little bit. And so you increase the heart rate. And then when you breathe out and the diaphragm comes back up, the heart actually slows down. And everyone with their Apple watches, with the Oura rings, they're all measuring heart rate variability. And that's exactly what we're trying to influence here, is that we want the heart rate variability to increase with this exercise. Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
And so it's like, why do we want it? What's the point? It's because we want the heart to tell the rest of the body that we're safe. And safe is going to be a very important word for what you're doing there, as well as the next point that you would want to practice.
Thank you. Was there any method that you used in order to reduce pain?
That's an excellent question. Thank you. And so one of my practices is that I like to layer things into what I'm doing. So I would start off by laying on acupressure mat. And if you don't know what it is, $20 on Amazon.com. It's one of the best purchases. It's a great way of just being able to relax. It's a little spiky for about 3 or 4 minutes. And as I'm laying there, then I'm doing the breathing exercise. I'm doing this diaphragmatic box breathing. And what I'm doing is I'm trying to get my heart to tell the rest of my nervous system, I'm safe. And then you go into a practice of somatic tracking. And somatic tracking is labeling these alarms of pain. And we want pain. We just don't want chronic pain, because pain is great. Pain is very informative. Chronic pain is horrible. Very difficult. So if you touch a hot stove, that's dangerous. And you know it, you get the signal of the heat. And then all of a sudden you kind of pull your hand back. Well, my foot on the right side has been burning for the past decade. And I'm pretty sure that it's not in a fire. And so I've been to all the doctors. I know it's just nerve issues. So what I would do, going back to this technique, I'm laying on this acupressure mat. I'm doing the box breathing to get my heart to tell the rest of my body that I'm safe. As I'm repeating in my head, as I'm focused on the pain, this is a safe sensation. And what I like about this phrase, this is a safe sensation, is that I'm not gaslighting myself. I'm not lying to myself. As I'm laying there in bed with the pain, that chronic pain is like a smoke alarm going off with no smoke, with no fire, but the alarm is still going off. And so I'm talking directly to that alarm and I'm saying to it, you're a safe sensation. My heart is telling my body I'm safe, and my mind, with my words, is that I'm creating ultimately a relationship with the pain. And to kind of, I really, at the end of the day, I want to bore my brain. I want my brain to be bored of the signal so it doesn't distract me as much by me training it through somatic tracking for it to be a safe sensation.
Thank you. Have you tried a lot of different techniques in order to actually completely remove the pain? Because, like, I'm a believer in a lot of these alternative techniques for removing pain. So what I have tried is bioresonance therapy, and it was working really well for me for a long time. And then I had like a traumatic event, and then it kind of like all my migraines kind of like returned, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't have them anymore, since May 2024. But I noticed the bioresonance device was working really well. Then, for example, I had one guy on my podcast that was talking about the power of prayer to kind of deliver yourself yes. to spirits. And then from that, basically
acceptance. You give it to God. I don't have to hold this. I can give it to God. And yeah. I have tried lots of different, from Tesla coils, pulse electric magnetic frequency, hyperbaric oxygen, red light beds, ozone therapy, stem cells, EMDR, EFT, kind of tapping modalities, a lot of these different, whether it's kind of a machine, ultrasound. I use ultrasound on a regular basis that I have at home, a red light panel that I use at home, a stimulator, and as it was called an alpha stem, but it really kind of stimulated at the end of the day the vagal nerve as a vagal nerve stimulator of sorts. And I've worked with lots of different doctors, a lot of different functional medicine doctors, regular doctors, but the functional medicine doctors have a lot of different ideas in terms of micro frequencies on devices as well. I've thrown a lot of different, whether it's supplements, procedures, and I'm not afraid to go out of the box. I'm not someone that kind of stays in a lane, because it's like everyone responds differently. Some people may use pulse electric magnetic frequency, PEMF, and it's like that does the trick. It's kind of like, and there was this other one where I can't even remember the name of it, but it was just this odd one where you would kind of breathe in something, and it was supposed to have some sort of cellular repair, mechanism to it. And I'm all for trying everything, and I would get different kind of results. And I'm not trying to sit here and say, oh, I have the answer. It's like because there are ways and there are modalities that can cure. Absolutely. And I think you should try, because you never know if it's like, well, maybe it was a vitamin D deficiency. Maybe you had a SIBO, you had a gut issue, and you didn't notice it because, you didn't get it tested. I've had my brain scanned multiple times by the Amen Clinic, Daniel Amen. I don't know if you know who that is, but they do a lot of brain imaging techniques. But I've done ozone therapy, IV multiple times, hypnosis. And so, one of the things that I come to in what I bring to the people that I see, because usually the people that I see are the people that have tried all these other things, and they weren't the lucky ones that really got relief from these different modalities, which, again, just because it doesn't work for some doesn't mean that it doesn't work for others. I think I'm someone that thinks we should cast the widest net. And if anything, people like you should be talking about these different things to make people aware. It's like, I had no idea about bioresonance. I should look into it. It's like, I should contact her. I should learn more about it through you. That's fantastic. But there are people and there are stories that get to a place of, okay, but what's going to be my relationship with this thing that isn't resolving? And who am I? Because the old me, the story of the old me, doesn't fit into this present life, where now I have this significant fatigue, and it's hard to eat through a plate of food. It's hard to take a shower. It's hard to do X, Y, and Z. And things change dramatically for some people. And again, this isn't for everybody, but there are lots of people where it didn't work, and despite all the things that I've done, I have gotten some parts of my body to be much, much better, but some parts, not so much. And so with those parts that are resistant to those other areas that have not yet healed, it's the relationship that I have to have with it. So I don't feel like there's this adversarial, conflictual relationship, because at the end of the day, I want to, if I can't reduce pain, I want to reduce suffering. And suffering is that reaction to that pain.
Thank you. So what else should people put in place to cope better emotionally with chronic illness?
Well, I think community. As much as possible, you want to find some sort of community. Now, I can't walk out the door and find, you know, my neighbors that have a primary immune disorder, but I can find them online. And if you live in larger city centers or places that are just more, there's a greater population, there are people that you can get together with and you can interact with, and that you want to spend as much time as possible around others, because pain and illness can be incredibly isolating. So whether it's through Zoom or whether it's through Threads or Facebook or whatever it may be, but you know, as much as possible, you just don't want to post about it and that's it. You want to have some sort of contact where you know these people, you know something about them, and these people, these interactions make you feel less isolated. And having a community is very, very...
Thank you. Did you find any relief in faith or spirituality, or something else that was like alternative?
Oh yes, I think everyone going through any kind of illness should read Thomas More's book, Dark Night of the Soul. And it talks a lot about spirituality and faith. And I think it's very, very kind of important, to address. Not everyone's going to carry that sense of faith, but when possible, I think faith is something that can be tremendously valuable. And I've seen that with many, many people. I see people who are less stressed and they are more, they just feel less anxiety. And the research shows it as well. Even Albert Brooks in his new book, it's like In the Meaning of Your Life. And he talks a lot about faith and happiness and faith and purpose. And purpose was going to be another thing that I was going to bring up. But the faith, it connects us. And it gives us, one, it gives us community. It gives us an idea of purpose. And I'm a big believer of like Ram Dass's statement that we're all just walking each other home. So a lot of times when we're feeling ill, we feel very isolated. We feel very alone. But through faith, we can come together. And you can worship together, you can believe together, and even in your higher power that you can believe in, that you're not alone in that moment. Because part of it is there's a lot of chaos, and faith helps organize that chaos, and it gives purpose and meaning and value to some of the darkness that comes with living with a chronic illness.
Thank you. Are there any like oils or ointments? I don't know, something that you have found kind of elevates your spirit when you're in pain? Because I found that when I had migraines, I mean, I was using ice. I was using like this, vapor rub thing on my temples. And I noticed actually rosemary oil when put around my temples, it wasn't relieving the pain, but it was just making me feel a lot better in terms of like being able to concentrate. Because, you know, when you have a migraine, it's sometimes hard to focus on basic stuff. All you want is a bed,
oh, yes,
a TV, and you're hoping.
And the pain is right in your head where you are. That's your, if your pain's in your foot, that's not where your consciousness is. Your consciousness is up here. So any kind of pain up here becomes very, deregulating. And I don't have the expertise and background and I have nerve pain. It's all on my left side. And when it was really bad, it would go all the way into my scalp and it would feel just like lightning bolts. And it was ultimately terrible. And it was stem cells and ultrasound and massage, CBD oil as well, that I would kind of use, on myself. So, and that's the thing. you want to remain curious, because the doctor will say this, okay, we're going to try this and this, but sometimes it's good to talk to maybe a naturopath. It's good to talk to someone that is maybe working with oils or supplements, or, you know, that does different testing. Maybe you respond better to muscle testing and other testing, who knows, but it's good to have an open mind, because it gives you a greater sense of hope and it gives you a greater sense of freedom. And I was always, when I was sick for years and years, because I got sick from black mold in my office, and which caused chronic inflammatory response syndrome, which then caused my common variable immune disorder. And my brain's, I need some rosemary on my brain right now. And so it caused my primary immune disorder. And so this was years and years of all different kinds of doctors. And it was usually the functional medicine doctor. And actually, I do have one doctor that does work with the prayer, and she will pray, and she will do lead me through this meditation. But she also, you know, is an MD as well. Her name is Dr. Shirley Wang. She's amazing.
Thank you. And did you find any empowering words to be to kind of shift your emotions when you are trying to cope with chronic illness? And what I mean by that is that, do you find, do you ever kind of go to the mirror and say, why am I so good looking? I don't know. or you know what I mean? Like, do you ever kind of tell yourself something that is like so uplifting, so empowering, that temporarily you get like a little bit of relief from your pain?
Well, besides when I would say, like, I would do the practice of like safe, like I'm safe. This is a safe sensation. So safe was an important word. But if I would wake up in the middle of the night and I was just kind of deregulated, the simplest thing that I would say to myself is this, I'm okay. It's like, I'm okay. That's what I would say. I'm okay. I'm okay. It wasn't an elevated, positive, aspirational thing that I was saying to myself. It was almost like I was speaking to like the mammal inside me. It was a Homo sapien. It's kind of like there was just, the sense of fear, the sense of confusion, the sense of just feeling lost. And so I would kind of grind. There's a technique called havening, where you just kind of gently stroke the inside of your forearm. So it's very sensitive, right there. And, you could just kind of do that and say, I'm okay. I'm okay. And I would call it much more of a grounding technique, more so than anything else. But I did find that it was important to try to discover new things. So one of the words that I would think about is like, what do I need to be? I guess the word curious or discover, because I'd say, I wonder, because only after I became ill did I write poetry and publish a few books of poetry. Only after being ill did I write journal books, put together coloring books, put together a podcast for myself. It was only after that, because I wanted to expand. I wanted to be curious. I wanted to increase my discoverability in my life and say, okay, this took things from me, but it didn't take away the story that I could write for myself. And I can't write the exact same story that I was writing before, but I can write something new. Let me do these other things. So I think it's ridiculous that I have 3 coloring books. There's no reason in the world that I should have 3 coloring books, but I do, just because I was curious about it. And I wanted to find out, I wonder if I could do this. I almost have 40 episodes on my, all solo episodes for my podcast. And I was just curious to see if I could do it. And now I'm in that place where I'm like, I wonder if I could interview guests. I wonder if I could do that. And so I may do that in the future. And so by maintaining that curiosity, wanting to discover what's next, kind of pulls me into that future, a more positive, more hopeful future where I feel as though I have more freedom.
Thank you. How can men cope better emotionally when they have chronic illness. What I mean by that is,
by listening to women.
I think what I mean is that I think that, for example, let's say you've always been, you know, like a great father and a great
caretaker, provider.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. And then you've always kind of like taken care of everyone and you look really good. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden something comes up and you have a chronic illness and you're not able to perform to the level you used to. I think for a man in particular who feels like, you know, he deserves respect and he deserves recognition mm-hmm. and wants to be loved for what he can provide. And
sure,
I think there's a big kind of like ego and pride that kind of, when that yes. is hurt, sometimes I think a lot of men not only perhaps go into depression, but they're not able to live with the new life that
is available. And oftentimes they get angry.
Yeah,
anger is where they usually go because they want to growl and they don't want to appear vulnerable. And that's why it's important to have, whether it's a coach or a mentor or, you know, someone from the kind of a spiritual background, finding someone that feels safe so you can be vulnerable with that person. And I would, you know, usually encourage, you know, that man to find another man who they could see it as a mentor for that individual so that they can get vulnerable. They can talk about the grief of not being able to be the same caregiver, not to be the same husband. They have injuries that interfere with intimacy with their spouse or things of that nature. And there's a lot there. There are a lot of feelings there. It changes their identity. And so I think it helps for people to recognize that anger isn't just anger. It's usually sadness, demoralization, and depression. And it's good for the man to recognize that so he can find someone to kind of help him regulate and help him process those feelings of sadness, demoralization, and depression.
Thank you. And how can someone transmute that anger, sadness, depression into something truly positive that can change themselves and change the world and also help them to like really make the most of it? And the thing that comes to mind is actually there's this guy, I'm sure you've seen him, his name is Nick Vujicic, and he doesn't have arms, yes. He doesn't have legs,
yes,
and mm-hmm. he has the most gorgeous wife that looks like a supermodel, and I think he has like three yes. children, and he has like 2 degrees, and he speaks around the world in front of hundreds of thousands of people. And I find that quite fascinating. Like, first, how did he get that kind of wife? Second, like, how is it mm-hmm. even possible to do anything? Like, how is it even possible to have children, like, with no arms and no legs? And I mean, I don't know how it's possible. How can someone kind of like get inspired, especially someone who, let's say, has always been, you know, like a good looking dude who is, you know, was always like pulling girls, and you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
someone who was like so prideful and so successful, making a lot of money, and then all of a sudden chronic illness, and like all of a sudden, you know, they have, like you said, like a brand new identity that they struggle to kind of accept. But how can they turn that around and turn it into something a lot better than they had even before?
Well, a lot better would be that it isn't about them, but about their ability to be of service to others. I'm a big believer and with the idea of service to others. And Nick is a great example. He goes around and he gives speeches. He's a talker and he likes to motivate. He's a motivational speaker. Service to others. And you want to own your scars as something that can be valuable. How can I be sick and provide some sort of wisdom, some sort of help? What has this season of my life taught me about being me and what I'm capable of? This is really difficult, but, you know, and the depression may be really, really heavy, but how strong am I to be able to carry this heavy thing. If depression is heavy, then I'm strong because I'm still here and I'm still carrying it. And so that's where you want that community, because you want to find ways of being a part of that community to serve other people. And so it's like, when in doubt, it's like, that's where at first I wrote like poetry, and the poetry is kind of more or less just selfish because it was just me yelling, you know, onto the page. But then I wanted to write these journals to give someone else the opportunity to, you know, write their story onto the page. And then I wanted to kind of create this podcast to give space, give voice to different journeys that people are on and different ideas, to give a sense of hope to people. And by just being able to give it away, and you know, it's just like that's my path. And I can speak for myself as a man of how can I help other people. You know, if you talk about spirituality, it's like you talk about the Bible, God uses broken people. You know, everyone in the Bible is broken, you know, and that's what it is. And so there is no perfection. You know, we're all broken in different ways, but that's where the line comes from. You know, that crack is where the light gets in. And it's like, what's the light, you know, that's getting into you? What is motivating you to do something for somebody else? It's like, because you can be sick, you can have chronic pain and still do meaningful things and provide meaningful ways to other people, but you got to be curious about it. And you have to first gather what you're capable of, because one of the things that most people do is they're always telling the story of what's been lost, but they're not telling the story of, okay, but do you actually take an inventory every single day of what you have? Like right now, you know that I can hear you, see you, and talk to you. It's like you can, man, my brain, and I have a brain that somewhat functions. It's like, okay, well, how can I use that? And maybe I'm talking, engaging with somebody else. Maybe I'm having an uplifting conversation with someone who's having a worse day than I'm having. Say, I can make a difference. The imperfection can be the strength if you allow a new story to emerge.
Thank you. I remain hopeful.
But it's kind of like, I would say, it's like, and purpose. Purpose, we need three things. Purpose, we need a direction. We need action towards that direction. And then that third is like, it serves others. It serves, you know, a great, something greater than yourself. You know, it could be, doesn't always have to be people. Maybe it's like, I believe in nature and I'm going to the beach this weekend and I'm going to pick up trash at the beach. And the service is to the beach. It's not necessarily towards others, but it's something greater than yourself. So when you're thinking about purpose, think about where's the direction? Is there action to take on the direction? And who are you serving? And should serve something other than you?
Thank you. I remain hopeful that any chronic illness can be healed. And I think sometimes you just need to go through a journey where you actually find the method that works. I remain hopeful.
I think we should be curious, because some people are carrying things, and even some can be healed, absolutely, or some people can be less burdened. We know that the emotions are going to exacerbate, you know, the pain, and it's going to make things, you know, worse. And so by addressing those ways of healing, and it's kind of like, and I may, when I talk about, you know, the individuals, you know, in terms of how that may not fully heal, that may only make up a small percentage of, you know, the whole story, because there are many people that maybe could be healed, and you have to find out first. You have to try first. And there are things that can absolutely be done to make the world a lot better for yourself. But you don't know until you try. It's like, you know, that's why they should talk to you. Work with you. See if that modality is the modality that they need in their life that will make all the difference.
Thank you. Tell me where entrepreneurs and people who struggle to cope emotionally with chronic illness, where can they reach you?
It would be at drbone.live. It's drbone, like bone in the body, .live. I have books, I have downloads for meditation, information just regarding myself. Everything's there, drbone.live.
Thank you.
Heal Podcast with Lily Patrascu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.